Well, good morning and welcome to the Roundtable panel live from the Linda in downtown Albany before a live studio audience. Give it up, studio audience, to prove that you're actually there. Back in June, we offered as a Fund Drive Premium the opportunity for listeners to come and to join us, and we have a room filled with wonderful listeners, and we are so happy that you're here. We thank you so much. For those of you listening at home, this is the one day where we will not be taking emails. We are just going to be working off the questions of the crowd. So we thank you very much for, you can still write in, we just won't read them. But please know that we'll be back tomorrow to the regular routine, but we have a lot of people here who are very anxious to answer questions. So ask questions and for our panel to answer them. So we're very excited to get started. Let me introduce the panel, and then we will get started. WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning,
how are
Doug.
You? Head of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo. Good morning. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here.
Yeah, Mike.
Author and activist Barbara Smith joins us. And corporate attorney Rich Honan is in the house. They're not booing, they're just saying, Rich. Good morning, and let's get started. Of course, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you're aware of this. I don't know if you were all busy last night. But in Cleveland, there's this convention going on, and a lot of stuff happened. But the big thing, the big story to come out of it is it's official. Donald Trump is the Republican nominee for president of the United States. Who wants to wrap their head around that one? Rosemary?
I'm just really happy that every time we talked about the Kill Trump movement, we kind of squelched and said, no, let's not waste any time on that. It was foreordained, I think, long ago. And who would have thought a year ago we'd be here? I worry about the future of our country and the world.
Mike?
Well, it is a surprise, and all the pundits, including those on this stage, called it wrong. As we laughed a year ago when he announced his candidacy and he came down that escalator at Trump Plaza down in New York City. But it is really important now for people to get a lot of information and make a thoughtful decision before they go to the polls. And that's our job in the media, to make sure that people have that information, and it's the voters' job to thoughtfully consider what they're going to do when they go in the polls in November.
Alan, are we screwed?
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, I once went to a meeting with National Public Radio, and all the regional people like us were there. And they went around the room and they asked the heads of each of the stations, why are you here? We're here to help NPR. We're here to help NPR, you know, that kind of thing. And then they said to me, why are you here? I said, I'm here to figure out how you're going to screw us this time. So
I was there. I saw it. You did say that. That's true. Absolutely true.
So they put on the board, they drew a Shartok screw meter. Where are we at this particular time? Because as you probably know, I've often said it, that NPR, like the 2,000-year-old man, you know, did you know Robin Hood? Yeah, I know him. Did he steal from the rich and give the poor? No, he stole from the rich, he stole from the poor, and he kept everything. And that's NPR. So anyway.
So Donald Trump.
Yes. So Donald Trump is all the way over to the right of the screw meter. The fact of the matter is that it could be worse. Hillary Clinton is a very unpopular figure in the United States right now. And, you know, if somebody like Ryan or one of the other guys were running, I think they might have had a better chance. In any case, the New York Times the analysis yesterday said 76% chance that Hillary would win. And if you believe that, I've got a bridge to sell to you.
It's down to 63% today.
Is that right?
Yes.
It went from 70-something, Rosemary, to 53.
And that was if the election was held today, right? Is that how they're figuring it out?
And I don't know if that's tremendously surprising since we're in the middle of the Republican convention, but that is a huge drop. And it just shows you how really close it is and how volatile it all is.
I would remind everybody how... that these guys at the New York Times were also the ones who told us that Trump could not get the nomination.
And we all agreed.
Barbara Smith, what do you make of it?
Besides wanting to crawl into a hole and...
Well, I'm glad you're here instead.
Yeah, become a survivalist or whatever. This is dire. I think we are in very, very perilous times. There's an article today in the New York Times, Black Republicans See a White Convention Heavy on Lectures. Those few people in the country who identify and are part of the Republican Party who are also black are feeling incredibly disenfranchised by the kind of rhetoric coming out of this party and out of this convention. Similarly, the LGBT community is feeling very much the same way. The Log Cabin Republicans, which is a Republican lesbian and gay organization, they're at wit's end. People are at wit's end because this party really doesn't have any room for those who are not the usual standard issue white heterosexual white males. So
this platform is the most extreme right platform in history ever.
Yes, in 162 years, which is really saying something.
Oh, Rich.
Okay, yeah. Get ready to do your heavy breathing exercises.
Well, the first thing I'd say is I think Thomas Jefferson would have loved it. He was the one who said every 20 years, you know, we should, you know, to maintain a strong country, there should be a revolution pretty much every generation, every 20 years.
And is this what he meant, though?
No.
Actually, when you think about some of the things that are being talked about, I mean, Jefferson was a proponent of, you know, a weaker central government and, you know, giving more rights to the states, giving more rights to private parties. But I think certainly the revolution within the Republican Party is something that you can't deny. I don't know that it carries over to the country at large. I think we've said before it's very difficult for any Republican, even a proper Republican, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, who you guys hated 4 years ago, and now you're saying, boy, where are they now? But it would be difficult for them to win just electorally. So I think that it shows some dissension within the Republican Party, which ultimately maybe, Barbara, may, certainly not this cycle, but may... at some point result in the tent being opened a little bit more and some of those voices being heard.
What really concerns me is how far backwards that kind of an administration would take us, particularly those of us who have had to fight for rights and still are fighting for rights. I just have great, great fear and trepidation about all the gains of the 20th century and into the early 21st century just being completely erased.
I just don't see the empirical evidence of that based on Trump himself. And you're going to say, well, there's no data points. I see less. Now I understand the, you know, the disappointing.
Rosemary's head's Rosemary. About to blow off.
I hate these things because I have to be so good here. I can't be kicking or...
Go ahead.
Rich, I just have to say, Thomas Jefferson did not suffer fools lightly. He hung out only with intellectuals and intelligent people. He would be appalled at what's happening in Cleveland.
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't think so. I mean,
I believe the entire government is set up to prevent the kind of mob rule and overtaking of liberties that we're seeing that Barbara's talking about.
No, I think I think Thomas Jefferson would have enjoyed. I mean, he was one of the architects of the two-party system of the party backsniping, the backstabbing. I think he would have enjoyed the party intrigue that of you know from the distance of being able to look at it at
well,
the other
we
party.
Well, we all enjoy it.
Okay. Well, Jefferson's dead. We're alive. So, Alan, what do you make of it?
Well, so, Rich, I guess the question... I'm trying to bait Rich now. So do you expect, because I do, that this guy is so dangerous to the people in the Republican Party that it is possible that if they think he's going to win, that a Bush or one of those guys would come out and endorse Hillary Clinton for the presidency of the United States?
Well, I think they already tacitly... have by withdrawing their support from the Republican candidate. I mean, there's two candidates, and if you're not for one, you're functionally for the other, especially where the Republican candidate, because of what the 28 electoral votes that are truly in play, really needs to win at every level. So I think that's already tacitly happened.
But it might lead to people not coming out to vote. And then you have a situation where a small percentage of the people will make the decision, and that could be different than what the whole nation wants.
I'd argue that we have that situation now, where a fairly small percentage of people, if you look to the states that are truly in play, and then the districts within those states, I bet the number is in the thousands at best of people who can vote to swing an election, even on the popular vote side.
What did we're going to go to a break in just a minute, but what did you all make of Paul Ryan's speech last night? Because he did seem
he's
to...
a eunuch.
How do you know that? Oh, that's why you were away last week.
Come on.
My question, he seemed to dodge around.
He's a racist. Let's back him. Come on.
Well, he's got a bad situation here. He wants to run for president. We all know he wants to be president. We know if he doesn't endorse the Republican candidate, it's going to cost them later on. People will never forget it, right? So he has to do it, but he has to do it in such a way with a wink and a nod, saying, I'm not really for this guy.
Did you get that take, Rich?
Yeah, I think that I don't think he's making any bones about the fact he sure isn't happy with where he is. I don't think he wants to be president as much as you guys think. I actually think Paul Ryan is somebody who really wants to sit down and have the wonky conversation of, you know, how do we use fiscal policy to affect social change and actually, you know, get into the gears of that. I think this is the last place he wanted to be. I think he's doing the best with the situation where he's in charge of a party that has become so dysfunctional that somebody has come from the outside and has swept away, you know, everybody who represents
don't think the he's he, you don't think that he's maneuvering to run in 2020 right now, expecting Trump to lose and be the leader of the party? I mean, that everything he's doing now would position him for that. And as Alan points out, he can't be opposed to their front runner right now, but he's everything but opposed to him, and he's saying everything he possibly can to suggest that. He's making jokes about it, et cetera.
Well, I think he feels it's his job, and I think he would feel it was his job either way, whether he was speaker or not, to try and preserve the sanctity of the party, and I think that's what he's trying to do.
Hey, Rich, to quote you, one of the Bushes, read my lips. He wants to be president.
All right. I stand by the eunuch verdict. I mean, right. how about the days when we had a leader who stood up and said, "This is where I want to take the party. We're better than this. We're here pronouncing the our." Sorry, I'm at the last minute.
We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we're gonna go to audience questions. So have those ready. We'll be right back live from the Linda. It's our roundtable panel. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Monticello, licensed real estate broker, 421 New Carner Road, Colony. Utilizing professional photographs, custom websites, and internet marketing to help sell Capital Region homes, MonticelloNYS.com. Saratoga Hospital, committed to women's health with the Saratoga Midwifery and Women's Primary Care Practice at Exit 13 of the Northway, SaratogaHospital.org. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, maintaining 32 miles of trails throughout the Lake George region for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.com. And the Whistling Kettle, Troy and Boston Spa, offering a selection of dessert crepes, including the Lemon Lulu Burst made with fresh cream and homemade lemon curd. TheWhistlingKettle.com.
We're now knee-deep in the audience. As we mentioned, we're not taking emails today. We are taking questions instead and comments from the audience for our panel. So you can't hide behind email. You have to actually face the person that you're talking to, which is very fun. How are you? Just give me your name and the question for the panel.
Catherine Jura. I was in the car last night listening to the convention, and I happened to listen in during the outrageously disgraceful. Chris Christie piece, asking the crowd, you know, took everything from Hillary's times as Secretary of State and turned it into a negative, and then asked the crowd, guilty or not guilty? And after about 20 minutes, I was actually so anxious, I had to turn it off. And I thought the crowd could just, the crowd was getting into such a frenzy. And I thought, is this really where we're at? Really? Could somebody comment?
Now, let's remember that this is a guy who has crossed over the bridge himself. That's number one. Has the lowest popularity of his career and probably of any governor. I mean, he's really hit the zenith.
Nader and he just got dissed by Trump himself, passed over for VP. Right. It was like the French Revolution. The only thing missing was the guillotine. He was Robespierre. It was horrifying.
And I think he really wants to be attorney general or something like that. And so they're all out to prove that they are more loyal than the other guys.
I thought it was really ironic that someone who could have been found guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors was being so incredibly, attacking of her. It just was, there was deep irony in it. And it was frightening.
Instead of counting sheep, I could count the furrows in Rich's brow to help myself go to sleep. What do you make of that, Rich?
What crime did Christie?
Well, the thing is, he was implicated and found not,
the same way that Hillary was found guilty of crimes, court of public opinion, not in reality.
Hillary was actually investigated by the FBI.
Christie too.
Christie was not implicated anywhere near to that extent.
Oh, please.
And you know that how?
But I certainly agree that, Christie is not, I think we were talking earlier, Christie is not the guy, who you pick to kind of, calm the crowd. I do think, it's my understanding that part of every convention is, rabble rousing, to get the base excited. Christie had a lot to prove, and I don't think he was passed over, Rosemary. There's no shot that he was ever going to be vice president by any.
I think he thought he had a shot.
He certainly thought he was passed over.
Which is just one of the reasons why he would never be that guy. But I think Christie also had to prove his Republican bona fides or bona fides because of...
Not to Trump.
But he did to the Republican Party, where he wants to have his future after his fiasco at the last election, where he was, kind of publicly embracing Obama and really, ticked off a lot of Republicans.
And wearing
some kind of hate fest. I think that's what people do. They get their base going, and I think we'll see the same on the Democratic side, in a couple of weeks.
But it sets the tone for the campaign.
Was that a boo? Were you booing him? Okay,
it's okay.
Ahead.
We're used to it. I get booed in the booth. It's usually Rosemary.
The editor of the Times Union has a really good comment. He did it on social media, and so I'm quoting him, but I thought it was right. He goes, when you call your opponent a felon and a devil worshiper, and she wins, how do you come back from that? How do you work together and say, oh, okay, all's forgiven, let's shake hands. We're in for up to maybe 8 more years of good luck. And that's the danger of what we're seeing. This is different than we've seen in other conventions. And you're right, I think we will see something similar in the Democratic thing, and it's bad then as it is bad now.
All right, one more question here, and then we'll probably go to a break.
Yeah, hi, Philip Hughes. A couple of weeks ago, Paul Ryan had a sit-down with Donald Trump. And do we have any idea what was said? My guess is that Paul Ryan reminded him, we stopped a Democratic president for 8 years. We can stop you if you don't do what we like. Am I off on that?
Well, let's put it this way. When they walked out of that meeting, it was clear to everybody that it had not gone well. We don't know exactly the words that were said there, but I think that the approach was, get back on the Republican team, get back with us in terms of what we want, and maybe we could all work together. And it was clear to me that Trump had gotten where he did by not doing that, and he wasn't going to change. And he said so. I'm not going to change.
Yeah, where was that meeting going to go? I mean, the whole reason that Trump is there is because Ryan and everyone else who's in power in the Republican Party has so badly dropped their opportunities. Trump's presence, his very presence is a sign of their failure. I mean, I've been in that situation, you know, from an executive standpoint. You know, when somebody screws something up and you're the person brought in to fix it, that's always a kind of difficult relationship. It's always going
to
be.
All right, we'll sneak in one more question here before we go to a break.
Hi, my name is Roshni Bambwani. My question is about everything that's going on nationally right now. And every time I get a news alert about another shooting, and I wonder, certainly there's more shootings going on, but I also wonder if, because there are some that are so high profile and making the headlines, if the media, and I apologize, if the media is putting more and more shootings in the headline to make it seem like it's more prominent, or if there actually are more shootings. Is there actually more going on, or is it just more that's coming to the forefront?
It isn't the media, but I can tell you this much. Every single time that one of these things happens, Trump's numbers are going to go up. And it is the kind of thing that we have seen in administrations, not only in this country, but let's say Germany, in the 30s, in which this playbook does cater to the incipient fascism that lies in every population.
I think it would be important to look at the daily statistics of these kinds of incidents to figure out an answer to that question. I don't think we can just judge it based upon what makes it into the media. I said a few weeks ago, before the deaths in Louisiana and in Minnesota, of two black men at the hands of police officers, I was saying, you know, there are these kinds of incidents happening every day. We're not reading about them. It was very clear to me, because they do happen so frequently. And that includes people who are not people of color. But the thing is that, for whatever reason, those two rose to. And then, of course, we had the shootings of
video,
police officers.
Yeah, it's the technology that's done it. Well, I think this has gone on forever, but you can't deny it. You have to address it when you've got a video in your face.
Yeah, but what about, I mean, to your point, what about the, what about the hundreds of shootings a month in major cities like Chicago? And obviously, I know the right wing, picks Chicago because it's, Obama's town and everything, but you could pick any city. And how are those shootings are no less tragic and no less life altering to the families. But you're right, the shooting of a young black man by a white cop is going to get more publicity, and the shootings obviously of the cops during
unrest. Only if it's caught on video. It happens all the time and doesn't get noticed, but when it's on video and on the internet, then it gets noticed.
I don't want to confuse of violence, street violence, violence by civilians against other civilians with acts of violence from police, safety officers. I think it's different, materially different.
Right. We're going to pause there, and because we have a break, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll continue with audience questions. We'll continue on other stuff. I don't know. I want to talk about Melania. We'll be back after this short break. Our roundtable panel, live from the window before a live studio audience. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Arameo, Mike Spain, Barbara Smith, and Rich Honan, our panelists this morning. For those of you listening at home, we're not taking emails today. Instead, we're taking questions from our studio audience, and we're talking to them. But certainly, we'll go back to taking letters on, tomorrow where it's back, but on Friday, we'll be back in the studio. So we'll do that. I want to talk about Melania. So we talked about this yesterday, and is this, and Rich, I'll start with you because I'm curious. Do you think it's do you think it's a non-story?
I don't think it's a non-story. I take, Mike's comments from the other day of, it shows something about the nature of the Trump campaign. I do disagree with Mike's conclusion that the way somebody runs their campaign is kind of a one-to-one correlation of the way they're going to run the White House. We've seen lots of people on both sides who are really good at campaigning and then aren't so good at governing. I don't think it's I think there's better. If I was going against the Republicans, I'd pick better stories than that. I'd pick the Chris Christie story and some of those things, but didn't bother me.
Well, Joe and Rich, I have never seen ever the kind of legs that this Melania story had. People were fascinated by it. Everybody who's ever gone to college.
Alan, it's 2 days old. It happened like yesterday.
This is like Kardashian stuff.
Alan also told me that Brexit was going to bring down American civilization. And I told him the stock market would be back in a week, and it was.
That's only a couple months old, not even a couple months. Mm. He's right that, too.
And Rosemary's a professor, you know. And we know about.
We don't like the poorly educated.
Yeah. All right. You guys may be able to see a fistfight. During the break, we talked about how we got along. You may actually get to see a fistfight. Well, here's the thing. So yesterday, I was thinking most of the day as the story was breaking that the one person who I felt sorry for in all of it was actually Melania.
Me too.
But then last night when
every
I read...
Day.
Every day.
Every day.
On the other hand, Joe, talk about bad decision-making on somebody's part.
Well, but then in reading the New York Times article last night... It seemed to indicate that she wanted very much control over that speech, and there is some question as to she was shunning those who were talking to her about the input in the speech. And then I came back and said, well, maybe she
My theory is she introduced the error, that she had a speech and, of course, rejected it, and then she worked on it herself. I don't think she lied. I think she said, I worked on it as much as I could. And she made the mistake, which, by the way, is a college freshman mistake. I see it every semester. She looked at what other first ladies had to say. She should have looked at the videos because I think Michelle delivered the speech. Actually, not only wrote it, but delivered it better. But at any rate, she took it and just left those words on the screen and begins playing with it. And suddenly, before you know it, Michelle's words... are in her speech.
She lied.
I don't think she lied.
She lied.
She's a billionaire supermodel. She can do whatever she wants.
Well, you have a point there.
One of the points that was made in the New York Times article, which I thought was a really good one, was that any of us in this room, but anybody, can download free software to catch plagiarism errors. And it just, well, how did that not get... through. I mean, that just seems like a rookie, stupid mistake.
This guy's going to have his finger on the nuclear button, and he can't control a speech in his own convention.
His own wife. I mean, it wasn't somebody else's speech. It was his own wife's speech.
And somebody wrote that. I don't believe all the other Meshuggah stuff. Somebody wrote that speech for her. And she lied. She said, it's mine, a little something from somebody else.
I think you have to realize that many politicians come up with general themes and general ideas, and then they get very good writers to come in and craft it into a good speech, and they modify it. And that's not unusual. But so it could be her thoughts.
Regardless of what happened prior to that,
right?
By the time it goes from it's done to we're going to put it into the teleprompter, why was it not vetted?
Well, even better is Donnie Jr. is in some trouble today. He hired one of his speechwriters, borrowed from something the speechwriter himself had used before it, but it's been printed. Didn't tell Donnie, I've used this line before. So he also now is under scrutiny. And self-plagiarism in journalism is also an offense, not as bad as plagiarism outright. But to the day after you've seen this wrench thrown into the convention, you're in the middle of it again? That's unbelievable.
What I think was amazing was that the Trump campaign manager was blaming Hillary for all the uproar.
That was amazing. That leave it to Hillary Clinton that when she's threatened by another woman.
Another female.
She will come out as if. And we should note that it was not the Clinton campaign that noted the error. It was an out-of-work journalist who was sitting in a Starbucks.
Right.
Yeah, and the
funny
thing,
a lot of them are. Yeah.
I said last time I was here, I said I'll tell you what they say on the conservative conference calls is they don't think that
conference calls.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake.
When you set the agenda
and
decide on the talking points.
Yeah,
you're in on those calls.
Right,
huh?
Exactly.
Okay,
but I will say. It was funny. The response from a lot of conservatives I know was by hearkening back to Michelle Obama, the one and I don't think this was intended, but the response from everybody was, yeah, remember what she said on the campaign trail. She was the one who said, for the first time in my life, I can say I'm proud to be an American. And that's what everybody on my side of the spectrum kind of took away from that controversy.
I'm not so sure she feels that way now.
It at least was a really sloppy mistake.
Is it a worse mistake than Michelle saying what I just said?
But here,
she meant it.
But here's the problem, and that's the water off the duck's back. As Rosemary pointed out, yesterday the New York Times said 76% chance of Hillary getting elected. Today it's in the 50s.
60.
So here comes this controversy. Here comes all the things that people in this room are convinced about. And yet that core group of Americans, I wanted to put an adjective first, but a poor group of Americans, core group, are in fact not listening. Not listening to one word of it. They don't care. They're just angry and unhappy, and they're going to just stay with it.
Let's go back to audience questions.
Yes, hi. Lillian Rolf. We've been, our family is a military family. My husband sets to retire in a couple years. So we've been looking at this from a world stage, and we are very nervous for the state of our country in the world and what my husband and his fellow military members would be asked to do, especially from words that Trump has said about torture and bombing families. And I'm curious what the panel's thoughts are about how we appear to the rest of the world.
That's a great question. Rosemary, you want to start that?
The rest of the world is following this really closely. Last night I was talking with people in Bosnia about this, saying, oh, my God, it's Yugoslavia all over again. Didn't you pay attention to what happened to us? I am really offended by people who say you have to be show support for our troops or vote for Trump and the Republicans who want to pump up the military. No, you show support for the military by making sure they do not go into places where we should not be. And are we paying attention to who those shooters are out there in the streets killing cops? They are troubled and untreated veterans. And we have huge problems and huge debts that we need to pay towards our own veterans. I don't see Republicans doing it. It's just more rah-rah glory and go shoot them up.
Now, on the other hand, Rosemary.
I got applause. Beat that.
You know, Rosemary, I could never compete with you. No, but we all know that this is a difficult time. Every time a cop gets shot in America, everybody who is concerned about law and order, quote law and order, is going to think twice about being protected. And the worst people, in my mind, we all have our entitlements to be angry at people. I'm angry at those people who are killing cops. I think I think they may think in their own minds that they're engaged in some kind of war, but in fact, they are setting back the movement that they think that they're protecting in the worst way. I mean, it's terrible.
I don't think that they're movement people. I mean, even if their website searches or their searches looking at their computer, you know, postmortem shows that they visited sites or whatever, I just feel like they are fundamentally not involved with movements, because when you're involved with progressive movements, you're not about mayhem and annihilation way. And it's a disconnect. I don't think that people really fully understand the frustration of being an African American in the United States. We are talking about what Michelle Obama said during the first campaign, and I was actually asked about that. And I said, I fully understand what she means. When you're growing up and four little girls are murdered in a church during Sunday school, a place where you have been virtually every Sunday of your life up until that point, it's your first response is like, oh, so proud to live here, particularly when the people who perpetrated that are not prosecuted.
But what do you mean by the word frustration? I'm questioning that, Barbara. Do you mean that explains, that the frustration explains the violence?
It's really, so people deal with bigotry and inequality and discrimination in different ways. Some people choose to spend their lives, devote their lives to altering that inequality and that bigotry by positive and strategic means. Other people just, explodes. What happens to a raisin in the sun? Does it fester, you know, or does it explode? That was a question that Langston Hughes asked many decades ago. And I just feel like people underestimate what the psychic toll is of having to live in a system where you are constantly.
But assuming psychic toll, you're not saying that you understand when a person goes out and kills another human being, whether it's a cop.
No, it's indefensible. Killing another human being is indefensible. I'm just talking about on a more global level. We need to put into context. Some people act out.
Yes.
Like, do you see what I'm saying? Some people act out.
Let me just say, in answer to the original question, well, first, and I'll speak to that, but in answer to the original question, I think that having to do with, you know, the military's unease about, you know, what is a guy like Trump going to do, I think that's legitimate. I think one of the irony is kind of within the party. One of the problems is that Trump has taken a more isolationist stand than a lot of the rest of the party is comfortable
with.
Well,
he says that, Rich, but in fact, nobody can find any evidence that he really was against going into Iraq.
Well, for somebody to say that, that Bush lied in the midst of a Republican debate, I think at least shows that the person felt strongly about it. You know, whether you can show that's what he said back at the time, I don't know. But I do think that one of the many inconsistencies with Trump is, you worry about when he makes statements about enhanced interrogation techniques. But then on the other hand, he talks about how we never should have gone in here and maybe we should be less engaged militarily. And it's just interesting that...
But he wants to declare war on ISIS, which does not exist in that one place. You're talking about blowing up the Middle East.
You know, it's funny, we're very big on, we've declared a lot of internal domestic wars on lots of things, and yet to declare war on ISIS seems to somehow be a thing that we shouldn't do.
Oh, he meant it in a metaphorical sense. I didn't catch that.
Well, we've declared war on poverty, how's that one going? We've declared war on drugs, how's that one going? We've declared war on racism, how's that one going?
That's what I'm saying, that he meant it as an effort.
No,
rather
I think he meant,
a war.
I think that he meant to declare an actual shooting military war against ISIS, and actually, not even to declare war, but to accept the fact that war has been declared upon us and to respond accordingly.
And what will the civil liberties implications of this be, assuming we have such a war and we start such a war?
A war against ISIS?
Yeah. In other words, what will the people in this room suffer as a result of a Trumpian war against those people who he sees as the
enemy. Audience member who just asked the question of how it personally affects her and her family as well as all of us.
Well, I think to her point, if you're in the military, I certainly think that he's somebody who's advocating more military operational engagement against ISIS and
her
other
point
cells.
Too, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you asked a very specific point about torture too, and if you're in and then. So I'm reading into your question of, okay, but they didn't sign up for that, right? Right. So, I mean, you know, you're going into, you're part of a military that is now saying torture is okay.
And Trump has said it's okay.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you're involved in a more policy discussion of, you know, enhanced interrogation. When does that become torture and where is the line drawn?
You think putting a guy with his water, his head in the toilet or below, not being able to breathe is definitional as to torture?
I'm willing to have that conversation, Alan. I certainly know that beheading people is torture, and I know that, you know, shooting people out in the public square is torture.
Two wrongs make a right.
I'm not saying that, but what I am saying is, as we have seen before, by publicly taking options off the table, whether or not we mean to use those options, we have demonstrably emboldened enemies. When we took options off the table with Assad in Syria, we saw what happened. When we took options off the table with respect to our withdrawal from Iraq and partially from Afghanistan, or largely from Afghanistan, we saw the enemies were emboldened.
I mean, the whole debate about
torture
is...
We're going to go to a break, but just go ahead.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's no evidence that enhanced interrogation, euphemism for torture, does get information that's reliable. In fact, most people say it doesn't. It's just a barbarous practice of ISIS. We should not be involved with it at all.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back after this short.
Support for WMC comes from the Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area, featuring 100 partner heritage attractions connecting people to the story of the Hudson River Valley. HudsonRiverValley.com. Traditions Linens Factory Outlet, Claverack. Finds from the factory for bed, bath, and home, plus current collections and natural fibers. TraditionsLinens.com. Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts. A new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs. SteveLewisSubaru.com. And Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, presenting chamber music performances by Dakota, musicians of Carnegie Hall, through July 22nd, skidmore.edu/summer for details.
Back to the roundtable live from the window. We have a live studio audience. Very nice audience. We've been very cool audience. I say that now. I could have pandered early on, but no, after the show, they're like really good. Excellent. All right, let's go to some audience questions.
I have a question. My name is Barbara, and I have a question because I'm a supporter of the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I got an email yesterday that was in reference to some of the things that have been said at the convention about Black Lives Matter. And the Southern Poverty Law Center has had requests over the past couple days to make the Black Lives Matter organization a hate group, to officially name them as a hate group. And we've heard this from the Republicans, and I find this very scary, and I was just wondering if any of you have heard that. And Barbara's comment about were they part of a movement or were they individuals triggered that in my mind, because this is a movement. Anyway, I won't answer it. I'm asking you.
So how did the Southern Poverty Law Center, how are they responding to those requests to define?
What they said is, we, of course, are not responding to this, and this is not a hate group. And if you go to the website and the link, and they talk about their issues and what their response is, and of course, they're not going to do that. And
I encourage everybody. I'm so sorry to interrupt. I encourage everybody to go to the Southern Poverty Law Center website. And I need to start getting their emails, too, because I've been a supporter since 1972. That was the year they opened. So the thing is, I have nothing but, you know, admiration for the incredible job that they do. They also have, like, if you look at their materials, they will have definitions of how they define hate groups. They have a lot of Black organizations that are defined by them as hate groups because of the rhetoric of those organizations and what they state they believe in. Anti-Semitism, anti-white attitudes, etc. Black Lives Matter, if we had had the kind of terminology that we do now around hate groups and etc., hate crimes, whatever, if that was in existence during the civil rights movement, and actually I think we can find that there are people who describe civil rights organizations and civil rights strategies as being hate activity. Do you see what I'm saying? So maybe it's not so new, but the thing is, I just feel like Black Lives Matter and other people are speaking out in a way that is quite familiar to those of us who've been involved in these anti-racist struggles for a long time and also who know the history long before our own lifetimes of anti-racist struggle in the United States. I'm really glad that the Southern Poverty Law Center is trying to shed light on this issue as opposed to heat. But it's like the Republican rhetoric and conservative rhetoric that is bringing that out now.
One more audience question.
Hi, my name is Ashley Burrell, and I actually have more of a comment. Today is my birthday, and so this has been like an amazing way to start my birthday. But I just really wanted to say thank you. I think having this kind of open, inclusive dialogue is so important for our community, especially right now. So I really just wanted to say thank you, guys. I love this program, and I love what you do.
Wow. All right, let's go. Happy birthday, Ashley. That's cool.
Hi, my name is Sarah. I am going to turn 18 in September, so I have just registered to vote. And my question... Thank you.
Does anybody have suggestions for her? Okay, check it.
Vote.
My question is, why do you think that a lot of people in my generation and my age aren't active and aren't going to vote?
Rosemary, you've thought a lot about this.
I have. I don't think it's new. I think it's always been it. It's we make it hard for young people to vote. You live in one place but go to school in another. So it's just difficult to arrange that. It's not something that you're brought up to do, I guess. And I don't know. I think you're a little lazy.
Well,
not her.
No, not you specifically, but as a group. Well, I mean, it takes a lot to be involved in the community. It takes a lot to know. I read all the time. Everyone on this panel does. You all do in this audience. And my students work. They have school to go to. They have papers to write. And so finding out about who to vote and who's the best person is the lowest thing on their list.
2 minutes. Roger Ailes.
Yay, he's gone. Ding dong, the Wicked Witch.
I didn't hear that one.
You didn't hear this?
He's negotiating a $40 million severance package with Fox News.
He brought them more than enough money. I don't object to the severance package. I wish that the women had spoken out earlier.
It Megyn makes me Kelly wonder, now.
Megyn Kelly too. And but would she have done it at all? Would we have heard about this at all if her contract had been renewed? And we women have got to take control of these of sexual harassment. I'm listening to 1300 this morning talking about, oh, all he did was ogle her. That's not so bad. Jeez, that's awful. Yeah, and we're saying that in 2016, and the women should have spoken up before this. I'm glad they finally have. I'm sorry we have a society where women are afraid to do it up until now, and I'm glad that it had an effect, even though I know the Murdochs are just using this as an excuse. He needs to go.
The number one critic in the country this morning coming out against the Ailes, and it really shows you what happens when your own turn on you, is the New York Post this morning. Ooh. It's all.
But also, you know, Rosemary, in defense of those women who don't speak out, I've sat with, and look at Gretchen Carlson. How much more highly placed? I've sat with a lot of. It's still the attitude among. I've sat with really highly placed executive women in leadership positions, who and they tell you things that don't even rise to the level of some of those things, and you say, you know, say something. Here's all the things you can do, and they really feel like it's going to hurt me from an executive level if I'm known as that person, because okay, I leave here, but then I can't go there or there or there because it's a small industry, and it's so attitudinal, and I don't know. I guess the only way you could change that is by really encouraging people and then making sure, but then having a follow-up to make sure.
I am not victim blaming.
We're out of time. I know you're not, but it amazes me just the level of women that and even in different types of industries, you know, than media, who still feel that, and it's really bad.
We are out of time, but I want you to join me in thanking Mike Spain, Rosemary Arameo, Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, Rich Honan. Thanks to all of you for joining us live at the Linden, for being such wonderful, wonderful listeners. I hope you will join me as we go out in our next 30 seconds to sing Ashley Happy Birthday. Take it. Three, two, one. Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Ashley. Happy birthday to you.